Well, this is the last week that we're talking about how to find true and lasting fulfillment in life. As we've been saying, we all really, I think, want to achieve success. We want to experience satisfaction in our lives and generally just be happy, right? Success comes when we reach our goals, whatever those may happen to be. Satisfaction is the good feeling that comes when we do. It's like the reward for a job well done. And happiness is just an overall sense of well-being in the moment. But fulfillment is different. Fulfillment is deeper. Fulfillment is the sense that your life makes sense, makes a difference, and holds ultimate value and meaning. And that's why it's harder to find. Fulfillment is more elusive, it's more difficult to experience, and sometimes it can even be a moving target. You may feel fulfilled in some aspect of your life, but not in others. Or you may feel fulfilled in some periods of your life, but not in others. And sometimes we can just completely drift off course and forget about where true fulfillment really comes from, or even that it's important, or something that we should try to pursue. We kind of block it out of our minds because it seems so hard to attain. I came across an article written by the social scientist Arthur Brooks. He teaches happiness classes at Harvard University, and he writes about happiness for The Atlantic magazine. And this was an article I came across in The Atlantic, and he was saying that there are really two fundamental questions we should ask ourselves, the answers to which reflect how fulfilled we really feel, how much meaning we believe our lives have. And those two questions are, why do you exist? Probably easier for Christians to answer than others. But for what are you willing to die? That's the second question. Why do you exist and for what are you willing to die? Those are tough questions. And in the busyness in life and all the distractions of life, there's a lot of people who just don't have the time or the energy or even the courage to ask themselves those challenging questions about their lives. So fulfillment kind of gets swept under the rug and we just settle for success or satisfaction or happiness. But every day, God is inviting you to a more fulfilling life. As we've been saying, it's really an invitation to grow in faith. And to accept that invitation, we have to overcome the many distractions and excuses that hold us back from spiritual growth. And as we said last week, we have to be willing to make a fundamental decision about where we ultimately belong. Every person chooses to belong to someone or something. Wherever you spend your time and money the most is where you have chosen to belong. That's where you've chosen to belong. But to have true fulfillment, to grow in faith so that you can have true fulfillment, requires a decision to belong ultimately to God. From His perspective, you're always going to belong to God. That's a given. But the question is, how much do we really want to belong to Him, to the Lord? It sounds crazy to say because we're all here in church. Of course we want to belong to God. But it's easier to say that than to do it because it means actually setting certain priorities in our lives and committing certain resources like time and money to deepening our relationship with the Lord. And that means doing it every day of the week, not just Sunday. And in every place we are, not just in church. But honestly, who wouldn't want to actually belong to God, to feel like you belong to God, like you really feel like you belong to God? I mean, it brings feelings of peace, safety, security, protection, love, acceptance, empowerment, and of course, fulfillment. And it just takes a commitment and a little bit of extra energy. A little bit of extra effort, like spending more time in prayer or giving more generously to God and to the poor so that you can grow in your spirituality of gratefulness and generosity, or engaging with the Christian community, the local parish, so you get to know people through small groups or events or whatever. or sharing your faith with other people, or serving others. Those five things I just said, those are steps in what we call a clear path to deeper discipleship. But you could call it a clear path to greater fulfillment. We're going to be talking about that much more beginning in February for the season of Lent as we begin a great spiritual campaign for the 6 weeks of Lent. A campaign that is going to be totally life-changing, I hope, because we're going to bring this whole parish together for the purpose of growing in faith. And there is such power when an entire community is focusing on the same thing at the same time. There's so much power in it, so much so that we, as the leadership here, have committed to purchasing hundreds of books that are going to be the centerpiece of this spiritual campaign. And I can't wait to share those with you as a gift if you choose to participate. And we're praying that the Holy Spirit opens everyone's heart here today and watching online over the next few months, opening our hearts to want to participate in this great spiritual campaign for Lent. We think this is so important because by growing in your faith, you will grow in your sense of fulfillment. That's what we've been talking about. And it's very clear that's going to happen. Your life will be more meaningful. It will be more fulfilling and enriching. But what I want to talk with you about today is the outcome of all that. Because the more you grow in fulfillment by growing in your faith, the more you will change the world around you. Something greater will happen in this world because of your fulfillment. And I want to talk with you about that today. And to do that, we need to look at a couple of the readings that we heard at Mass today. And I want to start with the second reading, which is a passage from a letter written by St. Paul to a very early community of Christians called the Thessalonians. These were people who lived in what is now modern-day Greece in a town called Thessalonica. And so Paul begins his letter to the Thessalonians this way. He says, "You know what kind of people we were among you for your sake." What he's saying, he's talking about when he, Paul, and the rest of his team visited Thessalonica for the first time and established a church there. And the people who joined that church got to know Paul and his companions. And they got to see firsthand what kind of people they were, what type of moral character they had, how much integrity they showed in living out their faith on a day-to-day basis. And then Paul goes on to describe what happened next, the fruit, the outcome of all that. And that's what I think is pretty miraculous. He says this, "You became imitators of us," meaning Paul and the other church leaders. "You became imitators of us and of the Lord," meaning Jesus. The Thessalonians started imitating Paul, and by imitating Paul and his companions, they started imitating Jesus. And then here comes the miraculous part, at least I think so. So, can we put that back up? So that you became a model for all believers. So that you became a model for all believers. You see, the Thessalonians were inspired by Paul and his faith, and that of all of his team members. They saw how despite all the setbacks that they faced, all the suffering they endured, all the persecutions that came, and all the problems and burdens that they had in leadership, they could still see that Paul and his team were unwavering in their spirit of joy and in their sense of fulfillment. And the Thessalonians wanted that. And so they started imitating them. And then other people in other places heard about it. That's why Paul goes on to say, "Your faith in God has become known everywhere. We don't even need to tell other people about it. They tell us how you turned to God." Wherever Paul went, he heard about the great faith of the people he founded, the Thessalonians. And no doubt, the people he met in other places were trying to imitate that kind of faith because they wanted what the Thessalonians had. And every time you choose to invest in your faith, to spend time and effort in growing in your faith, there are going to be people around you who want to imitate you. You will influence and inspire other people. When I was a kid, you know, I was pretty impressionable. Actually, I'm pretty impressionable today as well. If I hang around you long enough, I'll start picking up on some of your habits. I don't know why I do that. Maybe I'll use a phrase you use. It's just I'm impressionable. But when I was a kid, I was really impressionable. And I wanted to figure out who I was, like every kid. So I started imitating people I admired. And one of the people I admired was my father. I've spoken to you about my father on several occasions in the past. You know, he was a challenging personality. We kind of had a conflicted relationship, but I still admired him. He was a world-renowned scientist who had published over 200 peer-reviewed articles in some of the leading scientific journals around the world. He was a chemist and a physicist, and he contributed substantially to the body of scientific knowledge known to mankind. That's something to be proud of, and I was proud of him, and I admired him, and I wanted to be like him. So when I was 4 years old, my mom walks into the kitchen, and she sees me standing on the counter. Somehow I'd gotten myself up on the kitchen counter, and I was reaching up to the highest shelf in the cabinet, and I was pulling down, of all things, a heavy mortar and pestle, and I had gathered baking soda and sugar and flour or anything else that looked like chemicals to a four-year-old. And my mom is like, "What are you doing? Get down from there, that's dangerous." I said, "I'm trying to find a cure for some terrible disease." I wanted to be like my father. And so I imitated him. When I was 12, I looked up to my older brother. My older brother's 4 years older than I. And I wanted to be like him. Why? Because he was 16 years old, and he was a disc jockey. He was a DJ on a local AM radio station on the weekends in Atlanta where we grew up. Kids, if you don't know what radio is, it's this thing where they beam signals from towers, actually physical towers. There's no satellites and streaming and all that. If you ever turn, you can turn on the AM radio on your way home today, and you'll see what it was like, a lot of static and so forth. But anyway, so he was a DJ on the weekends, and I thought that was super cool, and I wanted to be like him, so I imitated him. I started spinning records at home. I started working on my announcer voice, but I didn't make the cut. I didn't make the cut, but I imitated him because I admired him, and I wanted to be like him. People imitate other people who have what they want. People imitate other people who have what they want. And when you grow in faith and become more fulfilled in your life and choose to belong to God more and more every single day by the way you act and what you do, people are going to want to imitate that. They're going to see your peace, they're going to see your fulfillment, and they'll want to imitate that. But also, it's not just your inner peace that they're going to, your inner fulfillment or zen or whatever that they're going to be attracted to. It's how you express it. It's how you express it. Because people who are fulfilled in life express it in a very particular way that is irresistible. And that's where I want to jump into the gospel. In the gospel, Jesus is approached by Pharisees. Now, all through this section of the gospel, Jesus is being challenged by the religious leaders of his day, right? We heard about last week how they were challenging him about whether to pay taxes. And then there's an intervening passage where they challenge him about whether there really is a resurrection of the dead. And then today, after Jesus kind of was victorious over the Sadducees who did not believe in a resurrection, the Pharisees come back to him and they ask him, they test him by asking him a really controversial question. You see, you probably know that the ancient Jewish people and still the Jewish people today have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of laws and commandments that they're supposed to follow. They're all in the Old Testament. And if you were a Jewish child as early as the age of seven or so, you would start having to memorize the first five books of the Bible. and you'd have to memorize all those laws word for word, and then try to, rest of your life, try to live all that out. And of course, it's kind of impossible to follow hundreds of commandments. So what was on everybody's minds and what the rabbis always argued about was, which one is the most important? Which of all those hundreds of commandments sums up all the others? So they go to Jesus and they ask him that question, and here's the answer. He says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and the first commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. These two commandments, all the other law and all the law and the prophets depend on these two commandments. It's called the law of love, to love God and to love other people. And so the more you grow in faith, the more you grow in fulfillment, the more you will express that, because you will become a more loving person. The more fulfilled you are, the more your heart is open to other people, not so focused on ourselves, right? We all tend to be focused on ourselves. But when we're more fulfilled and we're comfortable in that fulfillment, we're just naturally going to be more loving people. And love is irresistible, and people will imitate that, and love will spread. And that's the great thing that happens in the world. As you grow in faith and grow in your fulfillment, love spreads. There are many different ways to love God and to love neighbor. And today I want to tell you about one specific way that you can love your neighbor. You can love God by loving your neighbor right now, right here in this Mass. I want to tell you about the St. Vincent de Paul Society. It is one of the most, one of the oldest and most effective charitable organizations in the world. In Marin County alone, they support over 10,000 people annually by feeding them in their dining room in San Rafael and by getting many of them who are unsheltered into permanent and safe housing. At St. Hilary, we participate in this mission in a very specific way. We participate in this mission in a very specific way by helping people stay in their homes. Helping people stay in their homes. People come to us every year, many, many people, who are going through a rough patch financially. And they are being threatened with eviction, or their utilities being cut off, or loss of job because their car broke down and they don't have the money to fix it. We have a team here on the ground at St. Hilary of 12 volunteers who work in pairs, and they go out to meet with families who request our assistance. They go to their homes, they sit down with them, they pray with them, they listen to their stories, and they offer solutions and suggestions, and if it's appropriate, they will provide limited and temporary financial assistance. There are so many inspiring stories of people that we have helped, but I just want to share one with you today. And I got to warn you, when I first heard this story, I started crying. I was tearing up. It's a story about a woman named Sally. Grew up here in Tiburon. She graduated from Redwood High, and she earned her college degree from the University of California. She got married, had a family. Life was good until disaster struck in June, last June, when her husband died suddenly and unexpectedly, and she was unprepared for it. She became a widow at the age of 40, far too young. Well, Sally had a good-paying job as a paralegal, a part-time job as a paralegal, but without her husband's income, that would not be nearly enough to cover the family's financial obligations. So despite working through her grief, Sally got a second job working at night, and the family moved to a smaller place, to a small apartment. But even with the two incomes, working both jobs, it was barely enough to cover the rent, much less anything else that came up. Her son, who was just graduated from Redwood High last May or June and was going to go to Southern California to college, canceled his plans to stay home with mom, get a job, and help her pay the bills. They went to the food bank regularly. And when they finally came to us, reaching out to us for help, Sally had gone through nearly all of her savings. She just needed a little time to find a full-time job as a paralegal. She needed a little breathing room financially. Our team went to work. We met with them. We met with the family, went to their home, talked to them, and we paid a good portion of their rent and offered some Safeway food carts. It was enough to get them through, and they were very, very grateful. So we couldn't bring back Sally's husband, but we could give her the space she needed to find the job she needed to make ends meet. Sadly, Sally's story, unfortunate story, is not atypical, even here in Tiburon. Every year, we help dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens, I'm not exaggerating, dozens, multiple dozens of people who reach out to us for help because they need help keeping the lights on, staying in their homes, and maintaining reliable transportation to get to work. It is a tangible way that we are loving our neighbor, literally, because all these people live within our parish boundaries. They are your neighbors, they are my neighbors, and they are struggling. They are the working poor, and they deserve our help. And so today we want to invite you to consider joining in this great work of loving God and loving your neighbor. We will be taking up a second collection today for our St. Vincent de Paul conference right here at St. Hilary. With rare exception, all the money stays here at St. Hilary to do the work I just told you about. If you're able and prepared to contribute today, there are blue envelopes in your pews. I would ask you to put your donation in that envelope and into the collection basket, along with your regular Sunday collection, please. Donation, please. And I will tell you that right before the 9 a.m. Mass, I just donated online. A pretty significant amount for me. It was a lot because I so believe in this, and I wouldn't ask you to do something I'm not willing to do. If you're not prepared to give today, if you didn't bring cash or check or whatever, you can always give online when you get home. sthilary.org/give. sthilary.org/give. And we just really, really appreciate your generosity. It is literally loving your neighbor. Well, in conclusion, fulfillment, true and lasting fulfillment, comes when we grow in faith and we choose to belong to God more and more every single day and we make an investment in our faith. We grow in fulfillment. And the outcome of that is greater love in the world. Fulfillment, the fruit of fulfillment is love, because love is contagious. Love is catching. The more fulfilled you are, the more people will want to imitate you, and the more loving they will become, and the more love will be in the world. It's a domino effect, and it makes sense, doesn't it? Because the most powerful force on earth is love.